Welcome to Nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson. At the beginning of the 1950s, saxophonist Yusuf Lateef returned to his hometown of Detroit and began a decade-long process of evolution as part of the city's thriving jazz scene, becoming one of the first artists to incorporate world music influences into his sound. In the next hour, we'll hear some of the many recordings he made in the late 1950s and talk with music writer and Detroit jazz historian Mark Stryker about this key period of Lateef's career. It's the jazz message of Yusuf Lateef, the 1950s, coming up on this edition of Nightlights. Yusuf Lateef performing his composition Meditation on tenor saxophone with Hugh Lawson on piano, Wilbur Hardin on flugelhorn, Ernie Farrow on bass, and Oliver Jackson on drums from Lateef's album The Sounds of Yusuf, recorded for the Prestige label in late 1957 and released in March 1958, one of 11 albums that Lateef recorded between 1957 and 1959. At the beginning of the 1950s, jazz musician Yusuf Lateef returned to his hometown of Detroit. He was 30 years old, recently converted to Islam, and had begun to be prominently featured on tenor saxophone in Dizzy Gillespie's high-profile big band. But Lateef's wife was not well, and the couple had two children to look after. The next 10 years would prove to be a demanding and busy time for Lateef, but also an artistically rewarding one that would bring him to national attention in the jazz world with a prolific run of albums late in the decade and launch him on his path as a pioneer of bringing world music influences to jazz. Writer Mark Stryker, who devotes a chapter to Lateef in his book Jazz from Detroit, talked with me about the extraordinarily active life that Lateef led after his return to Detroit.
He worked in a box spring factory for a while, and then he also worked on the assembly line at one of the auto companies, Chrysler, as I recall. And, of course, he's working as a musician. You have to remember that he's raising these two children. He's got to support himself and them, and he's maintaining this sort of family life in the absence of his wife, who's not in the picture now for some reason or another. He's also probably taking care of her. And then he's working at night, and in the early to middle 50s, he goes back to school and starts studying at Wayne State University. Kenny Burrell is really instrumental in encouraging Yusuf to go to college and begins a sort of lifelong passion for education. Eventually, Yusuf gets a bachelor's degree from Wayne State, and then in the 60s, he gets his master's from the Manhattan School, and then there's eventually a PhD from the University of Massachusetts. And so this passion for education and learning begins in Detroit, basically. It's also, a remnant of his conversion to Islam, which had happened a few years before in the late 40s in Chicago. It sort of awakened a kind of thirst for knowledge and self-improvement. And so those are all factors in all of these things that Yusuf is doing.
A long-running musical engagement during Lateef's 1950s Detroit years proved to be especially important in his ongoing musical development.
In 1956, he starts a three-year standing regular gig at a bar on the west side called Klein Show Bar, which becomes one of the most important modern jazz clubs in Detroit, largely because Yusuf is in residence there. And they're playing five, six nights a week. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why Yusuf doesn't feel a need to move to New York in that time, because where else can you be working with your own band, playing your own compositions, exploring your own ideas? You know, he has the opportunity in Detroit to be doing that five, six nights a week for 3 years. That's not something you would get anywhere else.
Yusuf Lateef on tenor sax performing 8540 12th Street, the address of Klein Show Bar in Detroit, where Lateef led a long-standing gig in the late 1950s, with Wilbur Hardin on flugelhorn, Hugh Lawson on piano, Ernie Farrow on bass, and Oliver Jackson on drums, from Lateef's Savoy album Jazz and the Sounds of Nature. That same year, Lateef recorded one of his most remarkable and memorable pieces called Morning.
It's a landmark piece for Yusuf in many ways. First of all, it was on... His first two Savoy records were issued simultaneously, the best I can figure that out, in the fall of 1957. So this is one of the pieces that introduces Yusuf to a national audience again. And, you know, it's because of the use of the rabab, this plucked instrument that's creating kind of a pedal point, and it creates this sort of very exotic sound. And there's this whole, the way the drums are playing, Lewis Hayes is playing kind of with mallets, and it creates this feeling of a brooding kind of exotic modality. And, you know, they're basically an F minor. It's a 16 bar form. It's kind of a minor blues, but it has the essence of a modal feeling. And so it creates this mood that was very unusual at the time. And, you know, when we hear it today, since we hear lots of music like this, can be hard for us to put ourselves maybe in the mindset of what a typical jazz listener might have expected in 1957. And what they expected would not have been music that had this kind of exoticism. And so I think it's important in terms of announcing a big part of Yusuf's identity right off the bat. Yusuf has a big cavernous tenor sound, and it's very expressive on that track. And yet I will say, like all of Yusuf's music, no matter how exotic or avant-garde or outside the typical forms and ideas the music would sometimes go, and much later in his career would go much farther than this, Yusuf always had the sound of the blues in his music. And you can hear that too in his saxophone sound here. Thank you.
Yusuf Lateef performing Morning from his 1957 Savoy album Jazz Mood, with Curtis Fuller on trombone and tambourine, Hugh Lawson on piano, Ernie Farrow on bass and rabat, and Louis Hayes on drums. Another Savoy album from the same period, The Dreamer, is a favorite of Detroit jazz chronicler Mark Stryker.
Well, the thing I like about The Dreamer is that I just think it shows Yusuf at his straight-ahead swinging best. Some of the earlier records, you know, have the early experiments with Middle Eastern sounds and ideas and instruments and different structural ideas that he's playing with. And that stuff is great too. But in The Dreamer, he sort of sets most of that all aside. And it's The Dreamer is just really concerned with, you know, swinging hard bop. And he's got a really great cohesive swinging band with him. And everybody just sounds good. They sound relaxed, inspired. So the band is very cohesive on the record. It's the first record where Yusuf introduces the oboe, and he plays a slow blues on it, which is very, very expressive. He kind of gets this real snake charmer sound out of the oboe, and that becomes a real, you know, trademark of his playing going forward on the oboe.
Thank you.
Yusuf Latif on oboe performing Oboe Blues with Bernard McKinney on euphonium, Terry Pollard on piano, Bill Austin on bass, and Frank Gant on drums from Latif's 1959 Savoy album, The Dreamer. I'll have more of the 1950s music of Yusuf Latif in just a few moments. You can hear many previous Nightlights programs on our website at wfiu.org/nightlights. Production support for Nightlights comes from Columbus Visitor Center, celebrating everywhere art and unexpected architecture in Columbus, Indiana. Modern architecture and design to explore 45 minutes south of Indianapolis. More at columbus.in.us. I'm featuring the 1950s music of jazz artist Yusuf Latif on this edition of Nightlights and talking about him with writer and Detroit jazz historian Mark Stryker. Latif has often been cited as one of the first artists to bring world music influences to jazz. Closer to home, Mark Stryker says the vitality of the Detroit jazz scene in these years played an important role in Latif's development.
What we see in the decade of the 1950s is a musician who is coming to maturity slowly, and studying, leading his own groups, beginning to get his ideas and his concepts together, and begins to experiment with Middle Eastern instruments and sounds and ideas. And all of this is sort of fomenting in the 1950s in Detroit. I think an important thing to note is that, you know, because Detroit was so active in the 50s, the scene was so vibrant and there was so much to do and so much to learn, he could spend that entire decade there before he sort of runs out of things to do. So, you know, there are very few cities in the country where you could amass as much knowledge and as much experience and play with the caliber of people that Yusuf was able to play with and learn from in the 1950s in Detroit. You'd be hard-pressed to find another city in the country where you could have done that.
During these years, Latif also began to bring instruments and influences from an array of global sources into his music.
There's some general trends in his life that are pushing him in that direction, and then there are some very specific things that happened to him. More generally, you know, his conversion to Islam is a very profound moment for him, and it cultivates in him an interest in cultures outside of America. And it's through his Muslim faith that he begins to look at cultures in the Middle East and in the Near East and the Far East and all of that. And he begins to see the connections between himself and those cultures. And that just sparks an interest in learning more about the world. So on the one hand, there's that. And then sort of very specifically, he met a guy that he worked with, a Syrian friend, who introduced him to a Middle Eastern instrument that this friend called the Rabat, R-A-B-A-T. It's actually more of it's a Central Asian instrument. There's a version from Afghanistan. They're very various kinds of these instruments, but essentially this friend made one of these instruments for Yusuf. It's a one-string instrument made from goat skin and horse hair, and you could pluck it or you could bow it. Yusuf played it by plucking it, and you can hear that instrument played by one of the members of the band, not him, on some early compositions like Morning, The Sounds of Nature, you can hear it. And so that friend, that Syrian friend, literally made him one of these instruments. And that really got the ball rolling, began using that, trying to conceive of music where that made sense. And that led him into different textures, different ways of organizing the music. By plucking that instrument, you created a kind of drone, and that set up certain kinds of pedal points, and that set up ideas of a more static harmony. So some of those early experiments with that instrument begin to create kind of a modal sound. You know, this is now a couple of years, you know, before Kind of Blue. And so and that's how it got going. And then the more he learned, the deeper he got, the more rewarding it was for him. And I think that these experiments with what we now call world music are really important because I suppose on the one hand you could say, well, jazz had been assimilating music from Cuba before this, and so we did have the Spanish tinge in our music, but it's really with Yusef Lateef that we begin looking to the Middle East and to India and to Asia for other kinds of ideas and sounds and instruments. And that, you know, I think you can draw a kind of a conceptual line, right, between Yusef Lateef's early experiments and John Coltrane's India in 1961, and then Don Cherry, the trumpet player, experiments with Middle Eastern sounds and ideas later on. And, you know, you can bring this all the way up to the present day with people like Dave Douglas exploring Balkan music and Vijay Iyer looking at certain ideas from his Indian heritage. You know, conceptually, I think all of those things, you can trace a line all the way back to Yusef's experiments.
And some of Lateef's recordings from this period point to later developments in jazz's avant-garde.
There's a lot of experimentation on Yusef's early records, and the track Sounds of Nature and Love and Humor, those two tracks in particular, I think, are probably the most experimental. On Sounds of Nature, you hear Yusef is playing flute and he's kind of fluttering around, and Wilbur Hardin plays flugelhorn, and there are these kind of smears, and they're not playing in time or really over a conventional tonality here. And there's lots of little percussion instruments, and the whole thing sounds very free and almost in a way predates some of the sounds that the Art Ensemble of Chicago would make pretty much a decade later. And then Love and Humor, he uses a balloon squeals, and there's a 7-Up pop bottle that he uses to get kind of a jug band sound, and it kind of gets into a funky jug band groove, sort of, you know, mixed with sort of avant-garde ideas of the day. And it's, you know, both of those pieces are very evocative, kind of environmental soundscapes. They don't proceed on by way of sort of conventional melody or conventional form. And they're good early examples of Yusef pushing against convention, which is something I think he did throughout his career. Thank you.
Yusuf Lateef performing Love and Humor and Sounds of Nature before that, two pieces that foreshadow both Lateef's future musical directions and jazz's avant-garde movement of the 1960s, and both from 1957, the first year that Lateef recorded as a leader. Over the next 2 years, he made 11 albums in all, his band often playing throughout the week in Detroit and then driving to the East Coast to record albums on Mondays, their one day off from working in the clubs. Here's the title track of a 1959 LP written after Lateef had visited his wife in the hospital. "The ward was full of suffering and pain," he commented in the liner notes, "and I wanted to capture the impression the experience had on me." Yusuf Lateef and Cry Tender on Nightlights. Yusuf Lateef and Cry Tender from his 1959 album, the same name, recorded shortly before he moved to New York City, where his career would enter a new phase to be explored in a future Nightlight show. Mark Stryker on Lateef's significance as a musician.
Yusuf is not a musician that changed the course of jazz, but he's someone who created a profound individual identity and was always pushing up against the conventions and cultivated a kind of progressivism that runs through all of his music from the beginning to the very end. He's not like a John Coltrane or a Sonny Rollins on the saxophone, you know, who created literally changed the course of the music or created a whole school of followers, but he created his own sound world that was big, like sort of omnivorous, right? It just took in everything that he could.
Most importantly, Mark Stryker feels Latif's music was always rooted in the blues.
It's really a key to his personality and his music, and that is, as far as he traveled, and, you know, I make the case in my book that no musician of Detroit's golden age of in the 1940s and 50s, you know, traveled as far afield as Youssef did. I mean, he goes from the streets of Detroit, you know, eventually to a fellowship in Nigeria, exploring African music and Indian music, learning all of these Middle Eastern and Asian instruments. He writes poetry, he writes novellas, he ends up writing tons of formal concert music, symphonies, string quartets, piano sonatas. He ends up a tenured professor at the University of Massachusetts. He records in every African-American vernacular style there is. It's blues, gospel, hard bop, bebop, post bop, the avant-garde, free jazz, soul jazz, fusion, funk. He does all of this stuff. And even as he does all of that stuff, there's something fundamental about the blues that never leaves Youssef's soul. He grew up in the middle of the African-American neighborhood of Black Bottom here in Detroit, and that was a neighborhood in which the sound of the blues was everywhere, saturated that neighborhood. The sound of Black music and the blues in particular was all over the place there. And, you know, that got into his DNA and it never left. So as far afield as he traveled, he always brought it back home to Detroit and the blues.
I close with Yusuf Lateef performing Chang 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 from his 1957 album Before Dawn. Thanks for tuning in this edition of Nightlights. Special thanks to Mark Stryker. You can hear many previous Nightlight shows on our website at wfiu.org/nightlights. Production support comes from Columbus Visitor Center, celebrating everywhere art and unexpected architecture in Columbus, Indiana. Modern architecture and design to explore 45 minutes south of Indianapolis. More at columbus.in.us. Nightlights is a production of WFIU and part of the educational mission of Indiana University. I'm David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.